coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Everybody, how you doing tonight? Chris Jordan here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas. Well, Cedar Park, whatever. It's Austin North. Hope everybody's been doing okay. It is our typical 8 p.m. slot on a Tuesday night. I remember years ago in our previous incarnation, somebody asked me why we were live on Tuesday night. Like, why not Friday? Why not Saturday? I was like, man, most of the people that I know that listen to my show have kids. Like, Tuesday night is a prime night for them. If they can get to, like, there's nothing really at the time, there was nothing really competing on TV. Now it's Oak Island, Skinwalker Ranch. Like, we're completely decimated by that. It's hilarious to see our numbers from the old show many years ago, before those shows caught on. And what they are now, and how Tuesday and Wednesdays have crossed, where now we have more listens on Wednesday than we do on Tuesday. So, but anyway, I am a tradition kind of guy, so I kept with the Tuesday nights live at 8 p.m. It is scheduled into my world. I love hanging out with you guys. I love sitting back, having these conversations. Not too long ago, I was having the conversation with Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, and he mentioned the fact that, you know, I may not be a collar wearer, so to speak, in the ministry. He was like, but this is your ministry now. And I've really taken that to heart since. I want to thank you so much, Reverend Carter, for those words of encouragement, because I truly, truly do believe that this is my ministry. I was just talking to our first guest a second ago. Mike Turber is our first guest. We'll be chatting with him about the David Grush interview here in just a second. And I was talking with him, and he was like, you know what's funny? I don't know that I would want to be doing something different at this point in my life, like doing the investigations I'm doing and being the contractor that I am and everything else is what I love doing. And it's the same with me. Money, no money, doesn't matter to me. I love this show. I love the conversations. I love the way that we move humanity with our ideas and with these conversations. So, with that being said, let's hop on over. It's been a couple weeks, since we've done it, but let's hop on over and check out the news of the week. Over on our Facebook group, folks. News of the Week is always brought to you by the Curious Realm Facebook group. Stop on by, join us, join the conversation. That is where we post articles. That is where we have unabashed conversations. Out of CBS News, Netflix crew, whole boat exploded after back-to-back shark attacks in Hawaii. Quote, like something out of Jaws. Out of news.yahoo.com, Hunter Biden will plead guilty in a deal that likely avoids time behind bars in a tax and gun case. That is confirmed. He has gotten no jail time. So whatever deal he made was absolute sweetheart. At MSN, Jeffrey Epstein dined with Tim Zagat at New York's fanciest restaurants. At a BBC.com, global network of sadistic monkey torture exposed by the BBC. That is a rough, rough article. Politico.eu tells us police raid Paris 2024 Olympic headquarters in corruption probe. And let's see, one more out of ABC13.com. Couple vows to seal doggy door after vulture gets into their house. And there's some live video there. Stop on by and check that out, folks. That is the Curious Realm group on Facebook. Stop on by, join. It's an open group. We have great conversations. We post wild articles. Of course, while you are there, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That is your home for everything Curious Realm. You can stop by there. You can tune in live and see us on the interweb, everything else, like right here. See? Ooh, look, that's exactly what I'm doing right now. You can check out all of the past episodes. You can also go to our videos page, and that is where you can follow the YouTube pages of all of our guests, including Mike Turber and 5x5 News. Just hop on over to YouTube, check out his channel, 5x5 News. You can also follow him on Facebook. Welcome back to the show, Mike Turber. How you been, bud?
I've been doing fine. Been doing excellent. Getting ready to move along here and do some new things, but we'll see how it ends up over here. I've got some things to wrap up here in Florida, and then I'll be heading out your way. I might even drop by and see you.
Oh, I hope so, man. That would be epic. It's been a long time, actually. Last time we were playing with burning lasers out in my front yard at like midnight.
Now I need to bring up the plasma generator and now like good stuff.
I have a nice backyard now. We'd freak the neighbors out. There has been a lot on the front over the last couple few weeks, man. We had back to back to back, the NASA panel.
Yep.
Then we had the whistleblower come out.
Right.
And then right after David Grush, we had the David Greer press conference that happened. And all of these things happened within a week of each other. It was a week and a half.
And we had aliens landing in Vegas.
Aliens landing in Vegas, purportedly. Of course, the video that you saw of people crawling around, all that, that is confirmed not the backyard, folks. That is a confirmed fake video. But yeah, there was a wild landing out there of something. Mm-hmm. Looked like a meteorite, at least, from the couple of camera shots that I've seen. And once again, there's been a lot on the horizon the last couple weeks. It's been pretty phenomenal. It was really nice to hear NASA come out at the beginning of their panel and kind of call out everybody on social media and in email chains who had been kind of harassing a lot of the scientists.
Yeah, it's like welcome to UFO Twitter, right? I mean, that's just that's the going thing when people make any kind of comments in this arena, you know, for or against, it tends to start up a little storm inside the UFO Twitter community, and it gets nasty pretty quick. There's a couple of people that are in there that seems to be the main instigators of it. But you know, we muddle through it. And the problem is when someone comes in for the first time, and it's a shock to have that happen to them.
Yeah,
it's sad too that people can't, you know, maintain a decorum of some sort, but it happened.
Well, and even a lot of that was people directly emailing them and saying, like, you have been part of this massive cover up. You've been doing this. And it's like, hey, maybe somebody did something 20, 30 years ago, but I ain't been doing nothing but my job, Jack. But it was also great to hear, aside from that, and hear them address that and say that doing that does not further the cause. As a matter of fact, it makes scientists not want to take part in it.
Right.
Because they don't want to be targeted by that.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, it already has the stigma that's associated with it that I don't think will ever fully go away. It'll still be there. You know, until full disclosure happens or until they land on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
I think we'll be dealing, you know, with it as long as there's reason to be skeptical, or as long as there's reasons to not believe someone or what have you. There's going to be people out there that go one direction or the other. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but, I mean, it is what the internet is. And it's just a part of being on there. You gotta have a thick skin. I mean, you've seen the attacks I've gotten. And you just have to muddle through it.
I've, I've been on the receiving end. Other guests have been on the receiving end. It can be a harsh place, most definitely. That's just it. If it was just Twitter, that'd be one thing. But when you're directly contacting people, that means you have directly gone out of your way to to actively track that person down and find them. And then to be doing stuff like that on a government email. I don't know. That's a NASA.gov email, my man. That's a totally different filter set. But at the same token, to hear them take accountability and say that, yes, this may be science that's on the fringe, but it doesn't mean it's not science. And it doesn't mean that there isn't a 5% and exactly what I've been saying, a 5% anomaly, 2 to 5%. Even if there's 2 to 5%, like, we're scientists. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to chase that 2 to 5%.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, some of the science doesn't have to be done in such a way that person is putting themselves out there. There's a lot of science that is done behind the scenes, and we don't hear about it until
A
conclusion is made. And then those guys do a lot of hard work. And, but then you get the Neil deGrasse Tysons and some of the other guys that are out there that come out and do it front and center. And they get pretty vocal when it comes to this subject as well. And it gets pretty interesting when you have, a rap star thinking about some certain things, and you have Neil deGrasse Tyson come out and do what he does with the mic drop thing. And it gets entertaining. As long as they keep it in such a way that is a positive, end to it, then yeah, I'm all for that.
Well, yeah. And it was kind of like the when they went to the Go Fast video.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite honestly my favorite, because you and I have, how many times have we talked about the Go Fast video and how it is not what it appears to be. It is not what it appears to be. It is not, it is going slower than what it looks like. And
then the public arguments. I mean, one of the arguments I had, was apparently picked up on a FOIA request, John Greenwald, who runs the BlackVault.com, and he was requesting information on UFOs from the U.S. government. And lo and behold, he gets the email back with me on it, and Eric Davis and so forth, and this little email chain between Gaia, myself, Jack Cerfati, Eric Davis, and we just have this huge argument where, we went back and forth on GoFast, and he was telling me that my math was wrong, and that all kinds of different stuff, and that I don't have access to the information he had, and what have you. So to feel vindicated, now I'm totally vindicated. With
absolutely. It's like the scientist said. He was like, "This has gone round and round and round."
Yeah.
And the information that you need to find the math is directly here from the camera. We have the azimuth. We have the distance to the object. We have the known speed of the craft that's filming it. and he just starts doing the math. And then, like, three slides is like, this is an object going 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. And the weird thing is when you sit back and you go, wow, this video made it this far. And, Tom DeLonge picks it up. They do the unidentified series on A&E and all of these different experts that they apparently hired, and none of them decided to look at the numbers that are right there on the screen to determine how far this thing is. And it was said that they had two experts on that show that said that, well, that thing is hauling ass, and that it's 2/3 the speed of sound. I'm like, where are they getting these numbers from?
That thing appears to be hauling ass.
It does. Yeah. Parallax is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And if you're in the back of a pickup truck driving down the freeway zoomed in on a bird, it's gonna look like that bird is really hauling butt the way that the blurred background is moving really, really fast. The bird's moving no faster than an average bird. It's the speed of the camera against the speed of the background and the distance that's fooling your eye.
If you do a tight shot on something and the object is relatively close to you, but the background is far away and you're moving around that object, it's going to look like that thing is going well beyond any normal speed that an animal could do.
Yeah.
So
it was, and kind of like the scientist followed up with, he was like, our job, he was like, could be a balloon. I don't know. My job's done when I find out it's an object going 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not something going crazy fast like everybody's thought and everything else. So once we've done the math, we can pretty much nail it down to the fact of it's something small going 40 miles an hour.
Right. And the frustrating thing about that is that was brought to the attention myself, Mick West, a bunch of people brought that to the attention of, you know, the guys at To the Stars Academy and Lou Elizondo, and huge arguments came out of that. But no one, would retract the story. I even challenged the SCU to come out and to do that. I knowing that they would not actually do the GoFast video, but they looked at the other ones, but they would not touch GoFast. And that was one of the three, Navy videos that came out and that was, you know, being purported to show us that they were doing things that may or may not, be within the laws of physics, or may show aircraft or craft from another world and so forth. And it turns out to be that.
Well, so, and once again, I'll go Meatloaf all day long, man. Two out of three ain't bad, brother. You know,
absolutely.
If another two of those videos out of the three that started the conversation are still noodle scratchers, God bless them. That's awesome, because it opened the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. More has been done since that moment.
Yeah.
That To the Stars Academy, to their credit, to Lou Elizondo's credit, to Tom DeLonge's credit, and everybody else involved, to their credit, they definitely got this conversation going in circles that it never would have probably made. We would not be talking today about even Grush if this had not occurred. If they had not laid the framework for this to happen, we would not be having this show right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simple as that.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. And it has utterly changed the direction of the conversations that we have on the show whenever we have you on. Everything and to see even to have Stephen Bassett on last week and talk to him and hear it from somebody who's been on the disclosure front for better than the last 20 years that we are right around the corner.
Something has to break, and I hope that what we're talking about tonight will be the catalyst to get us to the point that it actually happens.
Yeah.
You know, our emotions have been played with long enough. We've all thought, oh, this is it. This is it. Oh, man.
And, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm connected with a couple of reverse speech folks. I definitely want to have them on to talk about the Grush video, behaviorists, things like that. Mm-hmm. But despite anything, because his credos are definitely there.
Absolutely.
And God bless him. I don't care if it comes out to be false what he has said, because we're going to be playing clips, folks, and talking to him and breaking him down, stuff like that. But remember, he has zero documentation. He has zero pictures. He has zero photos. He has testimony from people that he has interviewed along the way as part of the UAP task force. Who were witness to recovery programs or were part of recovery programs.
Right.
That is what he says specifically, explicitly. Not I have seen these things. He answers some pretty hard questions, though. And once again, whether you believe him or not, a lot of people didn't believe Lou Elizondo. We questioned Lou Elizondo. And motives and everything else. But at the same token, the whole time we're like, hey, the important thing is the conversation that it's opened.
Absolutely.
And now that box of worms is open, you ain't closing it.
It's gonna keep going.
All he's done is give you a spoon instead of a trowel to be able to dig with now. Because whether or not his claims can be founded, what it's doing is making the people who were already scratching their noodle go, whoa, what did that whistleblower just say? And whistleblower, yes, because he actively went out and filled out whistleblower documentation and secured a lawyer and everything.
And there's some caveats to that, but there's another way to look at this too.
Please.
Everyone has to understand is that in the words of Carl Sagan, you've got to look at this from the standpoint, is the evidence going to stack up with great, we have an expectation
Absolutely.
Now. And so when we look at this, this is not like some passé story. This by many, by most, I would say, would be the biggest story of all time.
Yeah.
Absolutely the biggest story of all time. There's nothing that anyone could probably say unless you have some major religious conviction beliefs that if your
unless
savior
you're sitting on
account,
top of the Ark of the Covenant.
Exactly. Something along those lines that might be up there with it. But this would be the biggest story of all time. So every few years or anytime someone brings up something like this, naturally, it's going to be scrutinized. And it's going to be scrutinized in such a way that they should know based on recent events, and especially in his situation where he's met Lou Elizondo. He's met other people. He's met people that I know directly. And in his discussions with them, he's still moving forward. And if he's moving forward, more power to him. I hope like hell that all of this pans out and that the investigation, comes to some fruitful end. It does mean a lot when you have the inspector general.
It does.
Going along and pushing this forward saying, hey, there's something to this. Yeah. Of course. Almost all of any of the evidence that he supplied to the inspector general is classified. So we don't get to see that. We kind of have an idea of what it is. But at the same time, since we don't get to see it, that kind of like shuts that door down to the transparency. But at some point in time, it'll probably come out.
I don't think it shuts the door down to the transparency. What it does is because it's landed on the inspector general's desk and that has been verified.
Mm-hmm.
I think that pretty much shows the transparency.
Yeah, it does.
And the fact of we'll find something out.
And
yes,
they're taking
maybe
it
classified everything else, but
and they're taking it seriously, and that is a good thing. And that for me makes me have to have some doubt, something inside me saying, you know what, this could be it. So I'm going to give him the greatest benefit of the doubt I can. But at the same time, you know me, I have to go in there and say, okay, if I'm walking into court and I have to prove my case, I have to come in there with evidence that is going to support what I'm saying. And in this particular case, he did bring the evidence apparently to the inspector general. So we don't get to see that. So, saying the inspector general would be like the judge or what have you. But I hope that the evidence that he brought forward is enough to push something through. The problem is that as you start breaking this down, it doesn't fall apart, but the key parts of it are kind of like a thought pattern that we've gone through over and over again is we get this information. Wow. We get all excited about it. And then we go, okay, well, what does he have? What does he have? He has some stories that was told to him. Well, we've heard that before. What else has he got? Well, come on. He's got pictures. He's got video. No. Does he have some documents? Maybe, but he can't show them to us, or maybe he showed them to the inspector general or something. Okay. Well, what are we talking about then? And what we're talking about is this. We've got a person who basically was a member of the intelligence community, and this person now has all the credentials that are necessary for him to push the story forward with the inspector general, is going to produce information that is going to push that that investigation forward, and we're going to hear the results of the investigation. We may not hear the particulars about it or anything that's specific to the case that's classified, but other than that, we will hear how this pans out, and hopefully it pans out in such a way that we all sit back in awe and go, wow, that was the precursor to what we would call full disclosure.
Stephen Bassett made the call on the show that he's looking for disclosure, this big D disclosure. He's like, I like that term, the big D disclosure. we get tiny little bits of disclosure all the time. You know,
we do. We do. I mean, the veil is coming down, slowly but surely. And some of the things turn out.
Summer. He said he expects to see an announcement from Biden this summer.
I hope that becomes the case.
I hope so as well.
I'm not sure if. Hopefully Biden will say it properly and won't have one of those gas moments that comes out right.
But, trip on the way to the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I ask. Please.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of microphones, let's go ahead and hop over to our first clip from the News Nation exclusive interview, which I downloaded, fortunately. There are not many places where you can find this full interview anymore. News Nation doesn't even have it on their YouTube anymore. They have clips of it, things like that. But
I wonder why they took it down.
I don't know. I don't know. But let's hear this first clip here where the reporter asks him what he found out during his time with the task force.
Sounds good.
What conclusion did you come to at the end of your time on the UAP task force?
The UAP task force was refused access to a broad crash retrieval program.
When you say crash retrieval, what do you mean?
These are retrieving non-human origin technical vehicles, you know, call it spacecraft if you will, non-human exotic origin vehicles that have either landed or crashed.
We have spacecraft from another species.
We do, yeah.
How many?
Quite a number.
You're kidding.
No.
That's the first clip. Once again, quite a number of craft. Yeah.
Quite a number. But what does that mean? You know, quite a number. You know, he has to be a little bit ambiguous and vague, especially when he's dealing with classified information, because anything that he says, if it's not clear by Dobser, then that becomes, you know, an issue for him.
I'd say at least three. I would say three qualifies as quite a number. It's more than a couple, less than a few, less than a handful.
I'd
shoot for the fact that we at least have three craft.
Yeah. Well, from his three, Lazar says we have nine, and so between him and Lazar, that number's in there somewhere. Hopefully, if we have one, I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah, but he says numerous, which would at least mean two or more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he says quite a few, so a few to me means a number, probably more than six, more than. That to me means more than that.
That's why I was just jokingly saying at least three. So
I just want to know where they are and what have you. So, you know, and that gets into the specifics that he can't talk about. I can tell you where they're not, but it's much harder to tell you where they are. And then he gets into the other things that come along with those craft as to what may have been inside them. I think that's probably going to be another clip you might play here. We'll see here.
Yes, as a matter of fact. That is our next clip. Let's go ahead and bang that out real quick, Mike.
That the U.S. government has been concealing the existence on this planet of alien life.
I would couch it as non-human intelligence, you know, NHI, like we would like to say in our language.
Why do you say that? Why do you say NHI?
I don't want to necessarily denote origin. I don't think we have all the data to say, oh, they're coming from a certain location. And I couch it as somebody who studied physics where maybe they're coming from a different physical dimension as described in quantum mechanics. We know there's extra dimensions due to high energy particle collisions, et cetera.
And you know, once again, one of the topics that we have talked about numerous times, and one of the things that is of course a going hypothesis and in many circles, including many email chains out there, is that may not be alien. It may be coming from a neighboring dimension that is just shifted via vibration.
Right. And I'm a party to one of the email chains I know you're speaking about.
It's my favorite email chain in the world, dude.
I wonder who got you on that.
Some guy I know.
Well, I'm glad you're on it, and we're privy to the same information. So one of the things that is a possibility that allows some maneuvering as far as, are these extraterrestrial? Well, they may not be. And as soon as someone says that, then and they're saying, okay, these crafts are clearly extraterrestrial. Maybe not. These crafts may have been made here, just not yet. And that people from our future or from a different dimension have traveled interdimensionally to us for whatever reason to do whatever it is that they need to do. That creates a whole lot more questions than if they were extraterrestrial.
Because I would venture to say, Mike, by all technicality, they're still extraterrestrial. They are not of this earth. They may come from an alternate earth. They may come from a shifted dimension, something like that, but they ain't from this earth.
What if they are us from the future using dimensional travel or wormholes or what have you to get back to here?
I could see myself doing that just to play with people.
Like exes or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just teenage kids from the future jacking mom's car on a Wednesday night.
Yeah. I'd go back to November 5th, 1955.
That's right. Every time.
Got to make certain that flux capacitor is created. Otherwise, right. I won't be going anywhere.
That's right. but it was interesting for him to say, I'm not going to pin it down to a location. I'm not going to do that. And throw out the hypothesis that it was more than likely extra dimensional craft.
Right. The question that, you know, obviously Ross, in hindsight, he does a great job as far as interviewing or what have you, but sometimes I get frustrated because there's a few logical questions that you could ask someone. And keep in mind that interview was 7 to 9 hours long. So they had to cut it down to 90 minutes. So there's probably something.
I've only seen a 40 minute version. I have not seen a 90 minute.
Yeah. And it's down, that with it being cut down. There's parts that I don't think he said anything that they had to cut because he may have revealed something classified. I don't expect that.
I don't think so.
And myself and anyone that's had any clearance whatsoever, you're pretty much told how to speak about something if the subject comes up and you cannot avoid it. Can, what you can't say, how you can say it. Yeah, and what you're not allowed to say is something.
How you can say you're not allowed to say it?
Yeah, yeah. And the old saying is, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. Of course, obviously, that's never been the case. It's never, no one's ever said anything.
I can neither confirm nor deny that that is the modus operandi, Michael.
And as soon as someone says that, the pendulum, that little peg that moves across that meter that says, oh, it must be true, pegs to the true side. Because as soon as someone, vehemently denies something, that's one thing. When someone says, I can neither confirm or deny, generally people tend to go, oh, that's some form of soft disclosure. That's the way people perceive that, even though it can be just as ambiguous and vague as any other answer that would come out. But yeah, that tends to lean one that direction. But in his case, he was, if I had to sit there and be a betting person, I would say he was coached, which is natural, which makes sense.
Oh, sure.
To sit down and maybe not necessarily coached by the military or the government or what have you, but I'm sure his lawyer would say,
I was going to say, I guarantee you by his, no different than Snowden was coached by Greenwald.
Yeah, exactly. So
people forget that. Like that was not an unabashed first interview that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. like yep. they met. And then he was like, so this is what we need to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then he basically became his handler after that. And this is very much the same way where he's got a lawyer who is telling him what to say and will be his handler down the whistleblower path.
Right. And what a lawyer he has. I mean, when yeah. you think about you could not have asked for a specific attorney that had the qualifications that this one does to the point where, you know, he was in a, let's see, Ross was doing a interview, and in the interview was Mick West as well. And I can't remember where it was at. But the question came up about that and about the attorney. And I guess Mick wasn't aware that the, who the attorney was. But the information was going to come out last Tuesday, that specific attorney that is leaving the firm to represent him, not leaving the firm, to move his case some other direction, but basically to continue representing him. Now that puts a lot of credence and a lot of credibility into what he's saying. In my regard, I would say, wow, if somebody's willing to leave a law firm and take on his case, then he must see something, inside in that case that is allowing him to make that decision. And I know what it would take for me to make that decision. I would have to have something very tangible sitting in front of me, or a sworn affidavit that everything he's telling me is absolutely true. Because keep in mind, he cannot discuss classified information even with his attorney.
Yeah.
Now, as far as you and I are concerned and anyone listening, I would probably present information to an attorney because of the attorney-client privilege that would allow that conversation to continue. So in that regard, the attorney probably has information he may or may not have been privy to in the proper way. That's just me surmising. I would assume. I mean, I've had to tell things to people that had to be quickly read in to the area that we were talking about in order to continue a conversation, just to get them to either manufacture a part or anything. So you can imagine how enormous this story would have to be. And just imagine walking into a lawyer's office and sitting down and say, well, wait till you hear this. Yeah,
Boy, have I got a story for you, buddy.
Yeah. And a story of my life.
Put your cell phone in this little bag.
Please do. And look into this pen when we're done.
Yeah. Speaking of which, that brings us to the next question that was asked, which was actually about species engaging with Earth.
Yeah.
There is an intelligent species engaging with this planet.
Yes, that's potentially extraterrestrial. Yeah.
I speak for everybody sitting at home. That is a shock.
It was to me. And I had a lot of sleepless nights.
Grush says he's never personally seen non-human intelligence, but he's spoken to enough people directly involved in what he calls the program that he's convinced it's real.
So, yeah, there it is once again, the fact that he hasn't seen anything himself. He doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't have any pictures.
Yeah. And that's where the old background music of wah, 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 wah comes out. And you're thinking, wow, okay.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no.
Well, exactly.
Of course, yes, there comes court. There comes time for evidence and everything else, but you got to go through an evidentiary search, and you got to have a reason to search for the evidence. You can't just show up on, a contractor's doorstep demanding something. Unfortunately, legally you can't.
Unless you want to go to building 611 right there at plant 42. But that being said, you have to think about this in a broader spectrum. And there has to be understanding on both sides.
Yes.
Both sides have to look at the other and say, look, I understand why you're skeptical. I would be too, with, and I kind of am, maybe because of the information that's being supplied, is much like what we've listened to before. We've heard all of this before. We've heard someone come up and say, hey, man, this other guy told me this. Here's the problem I have with the whistleblower status. A whistleblower, and I'm going to have to dig deep into the code and try to figure this one out. My understanding of what a whistleblower is not someone that heard something, which is basically hearsay. It's someone that witnessed something. OSHA, for example, is pretty much when you look up whistleblower program, you're going to find that OSHA is who.
What his whistleblower complaint is and report is that he was denied access.
Yep.
And part of the team, and not only denied access as part of the team, but has proof and evidence of shifty money. Proof and evidence of people hiding things from the government.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, whether or not he has proof and evidence of the retrieved crash vehicles or not, mm-hmm. is really irrelevant. What he has proof average, of is the corruption of the system and the corruption of the contractors who are working outside of the system.
The average person listening to this or has seen this story doesn't hear that. What they
absolutely
hear,
not.
What they hear and what their mind is thinking is that this guy has some form of proof that he's given to the IG that alien craft are in possession of the United States government, and alien bodies and or beings, whether alive or dead, he didn't specify, are also in our possession. And so that's what people hear. That's what makes the headline. And so with that being said, that seems to be what, with, you know, and I'm not talking about the debrief article that was written by Kane. We're talking about the Ross Coulthart video interview that was done.
Yes.
Which was done a little bit later. Now, keep in mind, he said some things a little bit differently to Leslie in her article than he did, with the debrief, than he did on Ross's show. So as you look back and forth between the two, it's like, wow, within just a few days, it went from this to now a much, much bigger story. And how much bigger is this going to get?
And if I'm not mistaken, she did the interview before the News Nation interview, but it wasn't released till after the News Nation interview.
I'm trying to remember I think the debrief article came out before Ross. I'm not 100% sure.
You may be right.
Yeah, I think the debrief article was first, and then Ross's.
You are correct, because Ross actually discusses the debrief article.
Yeah, correct.
In the interview.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Once again, the whistleblower status here doesn't come from having a 16mm tin of film, people. It doesn't come from having an alien hand that he recovered from a contractor's vault. It doesn't come from having a contractor who's willing to come forward. Doesn't come from any of that. What it comes from is him blowing the whistle on the dirty money train. Mm-hmm. And people who are supposed to be granted access to special projects being refused access to said special projects when investigating.
And the other thing I think that was part of his complaint was the reprisals, what happened afterwards. Like he was, he should have been able to do one thing and that was not put on the plate, although, he was at National Geospatial and had a nice position there. But at the same time, you have to look at this and go, okay, here's, from a broad spectrum and starting to narrow down the picture of what we're actually looking at. Does he deserve actual whistleblower status? Yes, on the part of the complaint that involves strictly him and things that were done to him.
Yes.
But as far as anything else is concerned, absolutely not.
No.
He does not qualify as a whistleblower. He certainly doesn't qualify as a hero in anyone's, you know, definition of it. As far as I'm concerned, a hero is quite a bit different. But he is extraordinary in that he has the balls to basically come out and say the things that he's doing, because he's taking a huge risk.
Even coming forward as the financial whistleblower. I mean, let's just put it in those terms. All right. I mean, that's no different than Iran-Contra, man.
Yeah. And at the same time, we're so used to that I think the American public, you know, and the rest of the world as well, understands that we spend billions and billions of dollars on projects that we probably will never, ever know about. For whatever reason, the same thing. And some presidents don't even.
At least $100 million or so per whistleblower to just destroy their life and make a move out of the country and never come back. Whether it's Julian Assange or, Edward Snowden, all kinds of folk. And that's just it. Hero is a hard word to use. Yes. But I would definitely say he's up there for being at least pulling the string and saying, all right, somebody's got to say something.
Yeah. Anyone that sees the things that he claims that he's seen becoming a whistleblower in that regard, I guess the term whistleblower is what is kind of rubbing me wrong.
Yeah.
Because he didn't see anything. He's like a witness on the stand that a defense attorney or prosecutor, depending on which side of the fence he's on, would just rip him a new one. He'd be like, did you see this with your eyes? So someone told you about something and you have taken that information from this person that may be the most credible person you've ever met. It might be a whack job on their deathbed. Who knows? And anywhere in between. But that information you are going to utilize in such a way that's going to blow these programs into the public eye, which I agree with. I think we should, I think the country's ready. I think we're all ready for this. We're so sick of hearing that someone's saying, well,
it's going to destroy society.
Yeah. It's going to destroy religion and no, it won't. Come on, man. Come on. We all saw Independence Day. It's okay.
I think religion did a pretty good job of destroying itself.
Yeah, pretty much. And so we have that. But at the same time, I look at this story from just the basic structure of it. Is this a nothing burger? We've had enough of those. We've had enough hype from the likes of Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp. I love to watch some of the things they bring out, because I just sit there and go, wow, you're 0 for whatever number you want to put in front of you as far as releases of anything that's tangible that we can sit there and go, wow, that was legitimate. Thank you, Jeremy Corbell. Finally, that's the kind of stuff that drives us mad, but it keeps people busy. But this is something different. If what he is bringing out is legitimate and comes to pass, this is going to be 2 years before we really hear anything come out of the Inspector General's office. That's about absolutely. Average. Yeah, that's about average for that. So, everybody's going to have to sit back and relax on this one. But even then, because the information is sensitive, it's compartmentalized, it's classified, it's, top secret, SCI, SAP, and it's in that category of classification, that we may never hear the peep out of this. It is the thing about the whistleblower program is that once it enters that program, they have to report back as to the results of what came of it. There's not like a settlement agreement. You're not going to sit down and go,
yeah,
okay, well, if you don't ever talk about this again, we'll agree to do. It doesn't really work that way. This is pretty much a guy saying that our government has done something that's immoral, or our government has done something that's illegal.
It's an all or nothing situation. There's no middle ground. There's no, like you said, like, hey, let's settle this thing out of court.
Yeah.
You bypassed that option.
Yeah. That's gone bye-bye. So there's a point where we all sit here and we go, wow, are we going to be watching a date where someone walks out of a courtroom scene, so to speak, up to a podium and says, ladies and gentlemen, blah, blah, blah. It has been confirmed that, you know, and then continue on with the full disclosure at that moment.
Yeah.
That would be, I think, what everyone is thinking is possibly going to happen.
It's exactly what Stephen Bassett said was going to happen.
Yep. And hopefully that will happen. I'm 100%, you know, even though people look at me and go, but you're a debunker, you're a this, you're a that.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm that way because you have to have skeptical people to make certain that the things that the people that may not have some of the skill sets or whatever the situation that causes the differences, they may not know some of these things. So they're following something that's not true, you know, like Corbell and his pyramids or something like that.
Well, I mean, a prime example right now among social media, Mike, would be the Schumann resonance.
Right.
And the charts that everybody's been posting with the fractal pattern on them, that's a sensor hitting ground.
Yeah.
That's the problem with posting something live that should be reviewed and everything else. People saw that happening live. Hey, whatever, 30 minutes, the technician took a nap. He went to go use the bathroom, something like that. You know, it's kind of like hearing a CD skip on air. Pretty rare, but it happens. Pretty rare that one of those instruments goes bad or something like that, but it happens. And when it happens, you get an anomalous readings like that or a repetitive pattern reading that's happening, which is exactly what happened. People saw it live and took it and ran with it. And it's like, well, that's why most Schumann resonance sites post things in the background after they've been checked and cross-checked. But yeah, I mean, people took it, ran with it, and communities have been alight with it for the last 2-3 days. People like Benjamin Lone Tree are like, hey, people, calm down. Like, Schumann's just fine. It's all good.
The shock of seeing something like that or hearing something, you know, you have to sit back and realize, okay, the mindset of the people were in at that moment in time, because we always remember where we were, what we were doing when something major happened.
I remember where I was when Lou Elizondo hit the air.
I remember that. I was in Vegas.
I was sitting at family Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember you telling me that story. That's right. You got to sit there and during the meal and actually have that discussion.
Yeah, I told you.
That's right.
I told you. And, you know, once again, I am happy that the conversation is being had. I am happy that veils are being lifted, that conversations amongst family are willing. Like, I would say more people are having this conversation in their household than a political one right now.
Yeah, probably.
Quite honestly, I would say more families are probably talking about the current state of the UAP situation and this whistleblower than are talking about Hunter Biden, talking about Trump's trial, everything else, you know.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that 20, 30 years ago, or anywhere
it would be
then,
anywhere, but in the last 5 years, before the last 5-6 years, it would have been 180 degrees, man.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting to see how quickly that tide has turned. And once again, to loop it back to the beginning of the episode, how quickly the scientific tide has turned to where, as the NASA scientists said, there are good scientists out there who could contribute a lot to this, but they won't because of where it is in the conversation. And we need to change where it is in the conversation. Us
and
coming aboard and looking at it and everything else changes where it is in the conversation.
Yeah. And the very first 5 minutes of that NASA panel that came out was basically the discussion of how they were, you know, treated and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I get it. But here we have the most important subject that has probably ever been discussed. And we are going to sit back and go through all of this information with the public and try to determine exactly what it is that we're looking at, what we're listening to. And we're going to have this panel of these scientists that are going to basically tell us, because each one is an expert in their own distinctive field, mm-hmm. and a respected person in that field, not just somebody who's inking. I mean, you don't get me wrong. What I'm about to say is going to be taken negatively by a lot of people, but the people that were pulled into the UAP task force were not exactly a group of people that I would have picked as far as being unbiased and so forth. I mean, as more and more people come forward and start to see who was on that task force, I start to realize, wow, this NASA panel is way, way better. Basically an open book, because we know who they are beforehand.
Yeah.
Which presents another issue for them, in that they're going to receive these random emails that they've been receiving, or, you know, things on Twitter and what have you. But, you know, they're going to have to get past that.
Yeah.
And stick to the job at hand and let us know what it is that we're looking at, you know.
Well, you know, my favorite thing was hearing the head of Arrow be like, listen, man, like, I've got the best scientific instruments that you can get. Like, they would make you jealous.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't point them at somebody's backyard. That would take an act of Congress.
Yeah,
and they ain't liable to let me do it, because that's not what it's built for. It's built to put a target, to put a weapons platform on a target halfway across the world is what it's built for.
Yeah. Well, just like the Hubble Space Telescope. I mean, that was built on the KH-11 platform. So.
And he was like, however, NOAA, you have satellites that go over Detroit every day. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to pick up these bandwidths, these frequencies, and all it is telling your stuff, hey, look for these two. Mm-hmm. Now we can come to you and go, we had an anomaly sighted at this day, at this time, at this latitude, longitude. And you can mm-hmm. go back and look at your digital records. And we can see all that data, same way that the weatherman can transverse back in time and see three, mm-hmm. 4 days before and see how the storm develops.
Right. And I proposed a long time ago, even I think you were privy. You saw the email that I had with National Geospatial when I was working on that satellite situation that we were trying to.
Yeah.
I can't exactly divulge what it was, but you've seen the email. There was a point with that I made to one of the engineers there, was that if we have all of this, archived, and I've got to be very careful about how I say this, we should be able to go back to any of MUFON's or any of the FAA
yep.
/ Bigelow, you know, Bass Aerospace, anyone that's called in and said, hey, I saw a UFO at this date, this time, here's the metadata from my pictures, here's this and that, what have you. If we can take that data and then match it to a satellite that may have been passing over at that time, out of the thousands and thousands of passes these satellites make, there should be one or two or more that would, you know, correlate. Remember the UFO that was over the Chicago O'Hare Airport? I mean, that's yep. huge.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be an image of that. I mean, so these are things I think that information, that the military satellites, which had the resolutions down to like 2 centimeters, you know, not 30 centimeters, like the which is the minimum that, you can look at with in the civilian world. Trump accidentally released one of the 2 centimeter resolution images of a rocket, I think, in Iran. But you know, these things are something that we should be able to do. And go back and look and say, wow, there really was something over Malmstrom, you know, base, and that was affecting it at that time. Yeah. And keep in mind, our satellites work 24/7. They don't go dark at dark.
Yeah, they don't take naps or breaks or anything like that. They are constantly recording data.
Right, and they also have LIDAR and things like that, yeah, which is on board. And if there's a actual object in the sky, they can see it regardless of anything else.
Yeah, they can tell it's a three-dimensional object, not a shadow or anything like that. Yeah, you can get a raster of that pretty quickly.
Yeah. And these are the things I'm hoping that comes out of this situation with Grish. I'm hoping that some of the information he brought to them that basically is to add credence to what he's saying. Keep in mind, he mentioned the people that told him these stories. They will have to be brought in, and they already have been a couple of them brought in and talked about. Some of them have gone public and said, "Yes, I believe them."
At the very least, their witness statements that he took have been submitted as part of his inspector general evidence.
Correct.
At the very least.
So there's a lot for us to sit back and chew on for a while.
Yeah.
And hopefully.
Well, and I was going to say, one of the things that we can sit and chew on is his comment regarding bodies.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting. Here is that little throw.
The United States has spacecraft, intact craft.
We do.
Do we have bodies? Do we have species of
well naturally when you recover something that's either landed or crashed, sometimes you encounter dead pilots, and believe it or not, as fantastical as that sounds, it's true.
Have you seen spacecraft?
I've seen some interesting photos and I've read some very interesting reports.
But he says the specific documents and photos that would prove his claims are still classified, and he cannot disclose them here.
Let's deal with the issue of your credibility.
Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what we were talking about. Anything like that would be part of what was sent to the inspector general. And if he had photos, that would be in there. Everything else. So,
and if that's the case, then it'll be a wait and see, or a wait and not see. It'll just be a wait, and someone will have to verbally tell us something. I mean, something is classified. It's probably going to remain classified. I don't see them declassifying something for this unless it's going to be some sort of full disclosure, because you're not dealing with just, people say, well, if you have a picture, what harm could that do? Well, it would reveal who took the picture. It would reveal the type of instrument that was used to take that picture. And it would reveal methods and tactics and things like this that our country will never reveal how we do things, because it puts too many lives at stake. It basically shows how we do things. And you know as well as I do that there's certain individuals that operate in that gray area under contract status, and those individuals can be compromised, and you don't want that to happen either. But this information was being shared directly between all of the Five Eyes countries, and so apparently
explain the Five Eyes real quick, because the head of Aero had to go into that at NASA. And that is it's one of those things that you'll hear thrown around. The Five Eyes say this, and you're like, what are you talking about? That is one of those alphabet, I guess, alphanumeric acronym. Explain what the Five Eyes are, Mike.
Yeah, Five Eyes is more of an IC term, which is the intelligence community. It's a term given to the five countries that mostly freely share our intelligence back and forth between each other without much problems. Like you'll see at the top of a document, it'll say TS, which is top secret. It'll say like no foreign, which means no foreign country is allowed to see this at all. Or it'll say 5I. And it's spelled with the number 5 and then I out. But the way the countries that are involved are, and some of these countries, people wonder, well, I wonder why that country, but you have United States, obviously. You have Great Britain, the UK, that's in there. You have Canada, which is kind of a given due to their proximity. And then you have Australia and you have New Zealand. Of course, some people will say New Zealand. Why would they be involved in it? And, but those are the five countries and that we share a lot of information freely between. There's other groups that are also in there. There's a seven member group, 10 member group and what have you, where we'll start bringing in other countries like Israel and Germany and Spain and stuff like this. But the Five Eyes countries are the ones that have the most, where we share that information freely between.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And that is, once again, one of our big, big security things, being able to freely exchange that information with people across the globe and share that intelligence.
Yeah. And there's a lot of information that is not shared. Some of it is just so compartmentalized or specific to the United States that it goes nowhere. But if there, ends up being a situation that needs to be shared or someone needs to be read in, then generally the Five Eye countries will be almost immediately approved to be read into whatever program operative or whatever is necessary to.
Yeah. As long as they're on an equivalent declassification mm-hmm. status mm-hmm. or security clearance status, rather, they would be privy to the information.
Correct.
And so they're part of the department.
Right. And they would limit that too. Keep in mind that the countries that we're involved in are also utilizing the framework that we have as far as compartmentalization of a lot of the programs that we have. That way, you know, you can't just have an entire department like, I work for the intelligence of Australia and you have like 1500 people that work in that department. They all don't get that information. It's going to be very specific to a very limited few that's going to get that information. And they would have to have a need to know. It's not just going to be something, just because you happen to be working here, you get that. It's just like people at Lockheed, you can work in building 611 and not know what the guy's doing in building 601 or 602. So forth.
But Denise brings the breakfast tacos. She can know, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No. She can come in the meeting. She's got the breakfast tacos. Keep talking.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that you bring up actually kind of an odd point. That does kind of happen periodically. I can say from my own personal experience, I was sitting in on
I
a
can say you know, from my own personal experience.
Yeah. No comment.
Nothing like having a common name.
Oh yeah. In your case, yeah, I can see that happening. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
But wherever this goes with groups, I hope that we get that both sides, whatever side of the fence you're on, or if you're literally on the fence, you know, three sides, if you want to call it that. Hopefully something comes out of this that we can all sit back and go, okay, this advanced the topic. This puts it forward in a positive way, in such a way that we in the future will learn from this. I'm sure there's going to be some mistakes that are going to be made, probably mistakes that have already been made. And that we learn from it as we push forward and we get closer and closer to either actual disclosure or someone actually come out saying, you know what, guys, there really isn't anything. And that will probably never happen. I don't think even if it does happen, where someone says, absolutely, we've never had contact with aliens. We've never had crash retrieval program. We've never had this. I don't see that happening. I do see some form of disclosure. Yeah. I mean, it'd be what we're dreaming in the back of our heads. But no.
We aren't gonna bring out a gray and shake hands with them on air. That's not gonna happen. They say that the Eisenhower Treaty is real and that mm-hmm. we have agreements with alien species. No, mm-hmm. they won't. But will they say yes? Contractors in the past and even our government have recovered things that have crashed mm-hmm. and we have technology that we have reverse engineered because once again, eventually And I tried to bring this up with Steve Bassett, and I think he misunderstood me. But like I've said before, eventually the money from the reverse engineering and everything else has to be made back.
The
investment can't be for naught. The investment of knowledge, technology, everything else. The only way it can happen, because you're going to see the technology. We're not going to be in the dark ages. I mean, good God, you can go out and buy a qubit processor right now if you got a zero before a comma in your bank account. You know, like I could go for $5,000 right now and go to a Chinese distributor and buy a friggin' quantum computer for like $5,000.
Yeah, but then you got to find out who's going to program that thing and who's going to get you the answers and what questions can it ask and, you know, is it going to do?
I'll basically figure out how to bulk slice bologna really fast is what I'm going to use it for.
I've been floored with just the ChatGPT here lately. I mean,
I love my ChatGPT.
Oh my God.
I love my ChatGPT content, dude. It's beautiful. It's great.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, that was one of the things that the whistle that David Grush actually said was that, their technology is likely to be much more advanced than human technology. And, here is the last clip that I wanted to actually play that I have on Slate for tonight. Make sure that you go out, folks, and look for this whole interview. It's a great interview. You need to see the whole thing. It's like 40 minutes long. But this is the last clip that I wanted to play talking about reverse engineering, exactly what we're talking about right now.
These materials for military use, so much more could be done if academia and the private sector had access.
It's totally nuts that humanity as a whole, especially, you know, the U.S. citizenry as a whole, they're not even benefiting from broad research on this to solve, you know, propulsion, energy issues, novel material science that can improve people's quality of life. It's just totally nuts how it's been protected and inhibits progress.
If you're right, if you're telling us the truth, everyone, the entire American public, has been lied to for decades.
Yeah, there's a sophisticated disinformation campaign targeting the U.S. populace, which is extremely unethical and immoral.
Coming up, how long has this been going on?
And once again, it goes on for about another 30, 40 minutes, folks, at least the content that I have seen. It's absolutely a great interview. It's just incredible to know that somebody has actively, and believe me, there have been people, I mean, Stephen Greer's come forth with things years ago. He's always got the Disclosure Project going on, everything else. And there have been great, people giving testimony to that for decades now, Mike. But to have somebody come forth and have an actual legitimate case with the before the Inspector General.
Yeah,
that's incredible. That's incredible.
And to see the Inspector General pick up that ball and go, you know what? There's something here. Let's move forward with this. You know, and you have to wonder. Okay, well, the first question that comes to my mind is what criteria has to be met for him to move that forward, or is it a set of protocols? That much like when a cop goes to a house and there's a domestic violence situation, they have to take someone to jail. You know, like, does he have to move it forward because it's part of the witness whistleblower protocol that if he meets certain criteria, he moves forward? Or is there a threshold that has to be met before they can move forward? The only problem I have with this, as far as that threshold is concerned, is that absolutely everything he has said that is evidence that he is bringing forward is not evidence in my book. It's hearsay. He's telling us someone told him. And that for me is so frustrating. I'm like, no.
Everything that this interview is based on is absolute hearsay. Most definitely. His whistleblower complaint, once again, based on financial paper trail, based on contractors who did not give him the access he was supposed to be granted.
Right.
All kinds of things. So there's that. But yeah. And that is said no less than three times in the course of the interview that I've seen that he doesn't have pictures. He doesn't have a chunk of debris. He doesn't have an alien hand in a jar.
No.
He has testimony from people.
Right. And the average person that's been following this whole story doesn't hear a lot of the situation is the whistleblower situation is because of how he was treated or how the monies were dispersed and things like this. They don't hear that. They hear we have aliens, we have alien bodies, we have crash retrieved things. They think that's what's part of the whistleblower program, and that's kind of a whistleblower complaint that he's placed. And if that's not the case, there is going to be another, like the UAP task force report when it came out. Everyone was all excited about that, and then it became basically nothing. And so that might be the case here. So I think they need to differentiate what it is he's actually doing with the complaint as compared to what he's actually telling during a television interview.
They are definitely muddying the whistleblower waters.
Yes, absolutely.
I would tend to agree with that. In rush of a headline, and not even in lieu of all the facts, because all the facts are there. But in lieu of filtering those facts for the audience, you got to go through and you got to listen to it and be open with it and be okay with it.
And you got to listen to this very, just like you're saying, you've got to listen to the very specific words he's saying and choosing to use during his conversations and his interviews. I don't know how many more interviews he's going to do. He seems to be comfortable with doing interviews. He's very likable. He looks, I won't get into whether or not
I'm bloodhounding right now. I can tell you that, Mike.
Okay.
I'm trying to find him.
All right. Well,
because I'd love to have him on. I'd love to talk to him about it. Hear it in his own words, more than what we have tonight. You know,
absolutely. If that situation arises because of the back channels that I obviously am part of, if that opportunity becomes available, I will make that mention and we'll see what we can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know me. I surprised you that one time with Surfy.
Yeah. My God, man. I was so whacked out on friggin' pain meds in that episode. I was ready for just a casual conversation like we have. And then suddenly it's like, hey, think fast. Here comes physics.
That was awesome.
And he wanted no side conversation about the physics or about what it might be or. Why are we talking about this? This is not the physics.
Yeah, this doesn't compute. I am here for this reason only.
Yeah,
right. But he is a trip. He's a good sport. But that was awesome.
It was a classy on air moment for certain. That's still a personal favorite to go back and listen to. But in all sincerity, it is great to see just in the time that we've known each other, Mike, where this conversation has come to, how open people have become with acceptance of the topic. Once again, I am always, because of my experiences, I'm always willing to listen to the experiencer and believe the experiencer until proven otherwise. Same thing with Grush. Until proven otherwise, I am willing to, at the very least, believe what he has put in a whistleblower complaint for.
Financial
corruption within black budget programs and with ongoing contractors with those programs and unwillingness to answer questions about crash retrieval when confronted.
Right. And even with that said, some of the things that he has discussed that are beyond that scope, I believe that he believes what he is saying is not necessarily just true. I can't say it as fact, but I believe he believes that the people he's talked to believe what they saw, you know, and that's hard to say and it makes sense, but he is convinced that the information that has been supplied to him is legitimate, is factual, and is real to the point where it will be included into his complaint, obviously to some degree or another, depending on which part of the complaint we're talking about. But he believes when you look at some of the, I don't want to necessarily bring up another channel, but the behavior panel, when they went through this.
Yeah. Yeah.
They come to the conclusion that he probably believes what he has been told is true, which means when he repeats it.
It's hard not to believe it when you go to ask somebody and then they're like, I'm not telling you anything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I can confirm or deny what you're asking me.
Our conversation goes to just the conversation we had just before we went on live.
I got to go. Deborah has breakfast tacos.
So there you go.
Boom. Door closes.
I'll never forget walking through the Pentagon and seeing that Taco Bell sign. I was like, wait a second, what? There's a Taco Bell inside the Pentagon. I'm like,
I could go for a tostada real quick.
Yeah, and I've got one across the street right now, and now I'm thinking about it. I'm going to have to go over there.
Now I'm thinking Instacart, damn it.
Man.
But in all sincerity, it is fantastic to see these things, to see somebody willing to come forth and say, yes, from what I have heard from contractors and people I have interviewed, we have bodies, we have crash debris, we have craft, all the things that we have heard and more, we have.
And I think the American public is ready. We are ready as best as I can conclude, because probably 5-10 years ago, I would have told you no. If we have that would be such a disruptive thing for the American public, especially certain communities, whether it's a religious community or whatever, that there would be huge problems to this story. Now, I don't have any ounce of intrepidation or anything. I guess that's the right word. I don't think I've ever used that word before. That anything in my body telling me that no, we're not ready. There's nothing there. We are ready. If you look at the movies that we're all conditioned to or whatever, if that was our form of self-disclosure to get us ready, then they did a wonderful job because we're ready.
I would tend to agree that we are ready for a lot of things on a lot of fronts, Mike.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Like I said last week with Stephen Bassett, I would be excited beyond belief if we have disclosure with a big D by the end of summer. Like he said, that would be phenomenal. It would be amazing.
Yeah, here's where I think we would run into problems.
Go ahead.
The problems would probably happen if these species have been intertwined into our, intertwined into our population for a long period of time, to the point where we start finding out that our preacher is a lizard and our blah, blah, blah is a this and a that. You know, I think that would be a problem. And I could see where they would have to hold off on that, you know, because some of the channels that are out there report that there's X number of species alive here on this planet are integrated into our society.
Even Michael Sala, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And him in particular, because I've talked to him directly out of it. And some of the stories that are fantastical, if those turn out to be true, I, for one, will be one of the first to sit there and go, holy crap, man, was I not necessarily wrong, but I am taken aback, because I would be one of the first to accept a lot of the things, but that would be a hard pill to swallow. So I could see where they might hold off on something that would be as powerful as that.
Yeah.
That would make sense. But otherwise, just say if they're not here, but they visit here, that kind of thing. And this is what they've been doing for thousands of years. And just
even if not thousands of years, what have you, even if they are transient craft from an alternate dimension, what have you? Once again, they do not have to be from a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah,
there are many other answers for them, everything else. The important thing is that we've found them. We have.
Or they found us. And we're accepting of it. And we're, I would love to look at somebody and shake their hand and go, wow, you've been an alien this whole time and you never said anything. He's like, well, Mike, I just couldn't tell you. I said, but I don't know. The tacos were excellent. But thank you.
Yeah, that's right. You just wait till you come to Austin.
Man. I think that's Alien Central right there, man. I hear so much about Austin. It's like, wow, it's one of those cities. It's a smaller city than a lot of cities. But my God, the stories that come out of that city and the people.
Yeah.
And you're there.
It's a pretty cool place. So
it is. It sounds like I think it'd be a cool place to live.
I look forward to seeing you. I want to thank you as always for coming on, helping breaking down such a thick topic, because it really is. It's hard not to have a knee jerk reaction when you hear these things. And once again, going through and listening to the whole thing is important, folks. It gives you the frame of reference. It gives you the numerous frames of reference. that are in there, that are the facts of the case. But once again, the important thing is the conversation that comes after the the conversation that it opens is the important thing. And I want to thank you for always coming on, having unabashed conversations with us, Mike. Let everybody know, of course, other than CuriousRealm.com/videos, where they can go to keep up with everything that is 5x5 news, where they can go to keep up with videos, keep up with you on socials, everything else, bud.
YouTube would be probably the primary as far as some of the things that we put out. I haven't been doing a lot of videos recently, but that's going to change. I've not said that before, but we're really close. That would be one. Twitter would be another spot to check on our the way we interact with some of these stories, because a lot of that's live. When something comes up and, Travis Taylor is there saying something and we interact with him directly live, you get to see that, whereas you don't get to see that type of interaction on any other platform. So between YouTube and Twitter, you'd probably get most of it, a little bit on Facebook, but between YouTube and Twitter, you're going to get about 90% of what I do.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, as always, my friend, thank you so much for coming on. Take care of yourself. You be safe out there doing all that crazy that you do to keep all of us safe. Much obliged for everything as always, bud.
You got it, buddy. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on, and I'll see you soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye, buddy.
Always an amazing conversation with Mike Turber, such a good friend of the show, such a good friend to me personally. Thank you, as always, Mike, for coming on and really hopping into the thick of a conversation like that and helping kind of decode some of the legal ease with which he has to conduct interviews, David Grosch. So if anybody out there is connected with him, feel free to get him connected with us. Feel free to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. Also, folks, that is where you can go to the story page, CuriousRealm.com/story. If you are a whistleblower or connected with a whistleblower, if you have evidence of paranormal events, if you are an experiencer of the paranormal, if you are an experiencer of UFOs, UAPs, if you have had a cryptid encounter, stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. Share your story with us. Share your pictures, audio with us, your video, and we will share it with our experts here on the show to try to get you answers. When we come back from this commercial break, everybody, we will be talking with our good friend, Jason McLean, author of Metroplex Monsters and host of the Seru Papers. We're going to be talking about the world of eschatology, the understanding and the teaching of death. What happens after death? The judgment that comes after death. What about those cultures that have thought that the world was going to end? What about cults that have thought the world was going to end? Are they crazy? Or do they have their own eschatological foundation in what they believe? We will get into that and so much more with Jason McLean right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. The Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Hello, everybody, and welcome back from commercial. Our guest in this segment, the amazing Jason McLean. He is the host of Jason McLean Questions Everything, as well as the Ciru Papers, and he is the author of the amazing book Metroplex Monsters. We have had him on before talking about the world of cryptozoology, and the Bible. And I guess kind of on a related topic, I've been chatting with a few people lately about end times, judgment, prophecies, things like that, and just the whole concept universally of death, eschatology, the idea of judgment and what happens after. Things like that. And I was like, you know, I know Jason has talked about this a few times. So let's chat with him. Welcome back to the show. Jason McLean, how are you doing?
So far so good, Chris. Always happy to be on with you. I love your show. You know that.
Absolutely, man. It is always a pleasure having you on. I love having you on. Give me just a second here. I actively need to fix something in my system that I just saw. But while I do that, let's have a quick chat real quick. Let everybody know, you yourself host a couple of shows. You were out there all over the internet regularly.
Yes.
Even guesting on other shows. Tell us a little bit about how you came into the study of paranormal, things like that.
So, okay, this is where things get a little funny, and I probably should have mentioned it before. Actually, my first sort of public writing was actually on eschatology, specifically the 2017 alignment from back in the day. And but what got me into the sort of cryptozoological realm, and again, I've been on, you know, we talked about this several times when I was on your show, on, you know, the previous times I was on your show, is my sighting of a living pterosaur just outside of Dallas, along with, you know, other people have seen similar creatures. And, you know, it got me started on that long sort of journey trying to figure out what is the shape of the world, so to speak, you know, metaphorically speaking. We know it's a sphere. Sorry to break the hearts of a few people out there. I know.
Man, you had me for a second there. I was almost worried, Jason.
Yeah, I know. you're like, wait, it's not a sphere? No, it's a sphere. We're all good.
It's all good.
But, you know, because my thought is this. For a worldview should actually describe the world in which we live, right? If your worldview is really not in sync with reality, I think it drives you crazy in a lot of ways. And we've seen people do this, right? We've seen whole societies just go insane and do terrible, terrible things because their worldview, it's not even the ideology, it's something much higher up. Something I say is that politics, culture, and philosophy are the children of worldview, right? Yeah. So if your worldview doesn't reflect reality, then your worldview is wrong. There needs, you know, if your worldview doesn't account for the strange, the supernatural, the cryptozoological, if it doesn't allow for these things, then your worldview is wrong. And honestly, I would argue this, we're seeing that in our culture today. People are starting to wake up to the fact that the world isn't what we've been told for the last, really only the last 100 years. Well, a little over 100 years now, since we're into the 21st, you know, 23 years into the...
It's only been 500 years since we stopped believing and, like, punishing people for saying that the Earth was round.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, people forget that. We've only been washing hands for about 100 years. Before that, it was ethers and bad air that made us say... It was like phlegm, an overbuildup of phlegm in our body.
Yeah. Exactly. The four humors. I mean, we stopped bleeding people within the last 200 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and again, this is when I tend to remind people who are like, well, what does the science say? Well, hold on. Let's not treat them like the new priests either. Right. Science is the best we can do. And unfortunately, we've run into over the last century where, yes, we've made amazing progress, but we're seeing a lot within the scientific community also. Yeah. Do behave as priests and do the same thing, right? And try and shut down people who are asking questions that are inconvenient to their worldview. So again, long story short, how did I get here? I saw something I wasn't supposed to, and I tried to figure out what is the world that we actually live in, and now here I am hanging with you.
Well, and that's just it. Your search and journey mirrors mine in a lot of ways. When I first started on mine, it was mainly a theological and philosophic journey. You know, I was a seminary student who'd had what I would believe to be an experience with the divine is what mm-hmm. led me down the path of my calling. And that led me all sorts of ways, led me to leaving the seminary, being a youth minister and religion teacher for years, all kinds of things. And it's interesting, Jason, how all of it loops back around. Even now, the fact of you wanting to get back more to your work with eschatology and things like that. Let's go ahead and start cracking that nut real quick of what eschatology is and how it does actively relate to the world around us, Jason.
Yeah, no. So eschatology is a very fancy word that means simply the study of the end, right? Of the end times. Now, again, every culture, every religion has a view of eschatology, right? Many, many different views, even within Christianity. There's as many views as there are denominations, but it's not Absolutely. Limited to Christianity, right? Everyone has it. Everyone believes there's a point when the record's going to stop and it's time to pay the tab, so to speak. And that's all eschatology is. It is going through sacred texts of whatever religion or belief system that you are a part of and studying that. Now, it's very common for people also to look at other worldviews and other customs and other traditions as well to find similarities. There's a lot of similar themes that we see across cultures, across even very unconnected religions, at least theoretically should be unconnected. We do see overlap in a lot of thoughts, a lot of processes, in the same way that we see flood myths all over the world, and some with even nearly identical details, even though they should have had no contact with each other in the past, right? The Maya and the Hebrew are a perfect example of that. So eschatology, again, boiled down, it is looking at the prophetic writings of this time frame that sort of everyone agrees is going to come eventually, which is, you know, closing time and when it's time to pay your tab.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of push things beyond the borders and point of religion when it comes to this, because I know quite a few people. I would say I know more people now who are not religious by any mm-hmm. means, Jason. I mean, at one point in my life, probably 7-8 out of 10 people that I knew or hung out with were of full-on religious background. I wouldn't say that now.
Yeah.
Just traveling as I have, working in the industries that I have, things like that, mm-hmm. since the time that I was a youth minister and did work in the church. But at the same token, I would say that I have come across a lot of people who are grounded in a very different way,
mm-hmm.
and who have a very different concept of end time, or even mm-hmm. end of their time.
Yes.
Like, for instance, going last year to the near-death conference and mm-hmm. hearing some of those stories from people who were not religious and still aren't really religious. But hearing that shared experience of having been to the other side and coming back, and even though not being religious, still knowing that, like, there is something beyond.
Yes. This, well, and this goes back to, I think, the earlier premise, right? Mm. Of what is reality?
Sure.
If, again, I come from a Judeo-Christian biblical background. If it's true, then what we see in the world should reflect that. We should see supernatural entities. We should see instances in confirmation of life after death when people have near-death experiences, right? People should come in contact with creatures that do not conform to our understanding of the world. And mm-hmm. it may be, by the way, that our understanding of the universe is just entirely wrong.
Oh, sure.
You know, this is one of those things that I mentioned a lot. So, you know, to the point that I need to find another way to say it. But I always say, imagine going back 600 years and telling people that the reason you got sick was because of microbes. You couldn't.
Yeah.
You didn't even have the language for it. You'd have to say tiny animals so small that you can't see are making you sick and living in your body. And they'd look at you like you were insane.
Yep.
Because that a microbial worldview, germ theory, none of that was on the table. It may be that the nature of our reality isn't even on the table. Like, what we think we're dealing with is such a flawed view that the reality is wrong. Mm. Or even yeah. the language that we're using is wrong. But my point being, we should see instances of people encountering things that don't conform to our three-dimensional materialist world that we live in. So for people to, you know, have near-death experiences and to see the, you know, that there is something else out there, this continual use of DMT and people encountering creatures that seemingly are responding to other people mm-hmm. and communicating information to them. Again, this is not a promotion of DMT. Please do not do drugs, people.
Yeah.
And don't go contacting the other creatures. That's all I'm going to say. That's my one thing. Is, please don't yeah. go contacting things. It's essentially the supernatural equivalent of a dude with free candy written on the side of a white panel van.
You know, on spoiler alert, folks. I don't know if you've seen Renfield Jason, but
oh no, I haven't. What, yeah.
Okay, there's a scene where a guy walks into his apartment and Dracula's there, and it's because there's a welcome mat out in front yeah. of the front door. And it's like, well, yeah, you kind of said, come on in.
Yeah, you did. Oh, no. Okay. That's going to get us entirely off topic, but I swear there is so much stuff like that going on right
there's
now.
There's a huge amount.
I'm starting to question a lot of things that we take for granted. And I'm like, has this actually exposed us and made this stuff worse, right?
Yeah.
Genuinely, again, even things like welcome mats. It sounds silly, but what if we're not doing the things where you go again, going back 200 years? Yeah, they weren't really washing their hands.
I don't know if a lot yes. of people 200 years ago have been rolling around with a black mirror in their pocket, Jason.
Exactly. No,
or
exactly.
sleeping with one next to their bed, or sleeping with a mirror uncovered.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Like,
when
this people died, they covered the mirrors so that
yeah.
the spirit wouldn't come back through the mirror.
We live in a world of yeah. mirrors, a world of mirrors where we're using the names of these spirits. It used to be people are like, no, you don't say the names of these things
yeah.
ever under any circumstances. We're like, well, let's put their names in songs and let's sing them in our cars with our kids.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
What? Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, it's like people are like, well, why do you think the veil is thinning? Well, maybe it's because we stopped taking precautions, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because we started doing really things our ancestors would look at us and say, are you freaking insane? You're attracting these things. Like, if you leave food out on your kitchen table, if you don't clean up things, you're going to get ants.
Yep.
The supernatural is just the same thing. If you make yourself open, if your houses are open, if you're watching things and doing things that give these things access to you, what do you think is going to happen?
Now, because I fully, fully, full on agree with you, Jason. Not that I wouldn't, and I for a minute toyed with the idea merch wise of having like a Curious Realm answer board.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. And not that I don't know some people who are adept and fantastic and would not misuse, or that it wouldn't improperly affect them. However, I would be encouraging general use of such an item by untrained people. And I don't recommend that. I don't recommend you go start like drawing out white circles on your floor and think that that's going to stop everything.
No, you know? Exactly. It's like you don't hand loaded guns to children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Precisely. And then walk away.
It was a big point of my responsibility when I was talking with my brother. I was like, I can't do that. I was like, I can't do that. You know, I would just be inviting it into other people's lives. And be a part of exactly what we're discussing right now, which is the idea of taking that for granted, the idea of, and I guess that there is a certain amount of ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Because once you kind of know the repercussions of something, you're kind of responsible for the action that leads to them.
Absolutely. And to bring this all back to eschatology, because I do think that there's a connection here. It is most eschatologies sort of all agree that the supernatural is going to start getting ramped up to 11 during that last time period where things are going to be nuts. Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. A lot of theologians are now starting to look at that and say, maybe he's actually talking about the Nephilim and the things that we saw in the Book of Enoch. Mm. It does appear as if things are going to be ramped up, turned up to 11. I think this is all part of that same environment. This post, this pre-apocalyptic world that we're inhabiting right now. Again, does that mean it's tomorrow? No. Does it mean it's 100 years off? No. But we're in this time frame that's preparing for it, so things are going to start amping up. Yeah. Now, is it inevitable? That's a whole other conversation. But I think the other part, most people see eschatology as a bad thing, saying, oh, the end of the world, it's a bad thing. Well, in the Christian worldview, again, there's a lot of different views. I'll just use mine. I am premillennial, meaning that I think that when Christ returns, he will reign for 1,000 years. The thing is, when we talk about eschatology, it's actually just the end of this current world system.
Yeah,
I think that's a big deal. People think, oh, it's the end of the world, it means everything stops. No, that's a little bit further down the line. And even then, it doesn't actually stop. It's an end to a system of corruption that we currently inhabit.
Yeah,
that's all it is. It's the end of that system, and that a new kingdom is set up for humanity to live under, with where people can actually build their lives without being oppressed by the tyrants of this age. It's the end of an age is all it is.
Yeah.
And again, most eschatologies share that idea. It's like, no, it's not the end. It's just the end of this current system that we inhabit.
Well, even the Mayan prophecy of 2012, unfortunately, folks, I wouldn't even say it was misinterpreted. I think it went directly as it was supposed to. It was a ending of a cycle of day and night, as counted by the Mayan calendar. And it's not necessarily that the world ended. It's that the cycle ended and they didn't count past that cycle. That's all. Cause it was bit in the future. Now,
yeah, they're like, we have several centuries to get back to it.
The changeover of night and day in the Mayan calendar, though, does have great significance. And it is exactly like you're saying, it is the end of one age, the beginning of another. And it is basically the daytime and the end of the daytime, which people saw as the end of the world in 2012, was the end of the emerging of a technology, be it fire, the wheel, what have you. Now the next age of 3,600 years is how you're applying that and how that is changing humanity and how that, yes, as you're saying, brings an end to an old age and a whole new one.
Yep. And again, so from, I think the problem is we tend to look at eschatology with fear. And yeah, there's some scary stuff that is talked about happening.
Yeah.
But it's but the end of it is something new. It's something glorious. Again, I'd get on the right side of Jesus. That's me, right? But, you know, you want to be on that right side. But the thing is, it's not the end. It isn't like, okay, everything's done. No, there is a society that moves on and continues and prospers. And there's a flourishing of humanity after that point.
Yeah.
To build something that will last for 1,000 years. So it is often, I think, looked at, and we focus on the negative instead of realizing, no, those are the birth pains of something much better, something greater. And that's what the focus really needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Because it is through change. And unfortunately, most change is violent change. You're hard pressed even in chemistry to mix a couple things together and not get an exothermic reaction or an endothermic reaction or some 100%. Sort of volatile reaction. Mm-hmm. And the world is very much the same way. The universe is very much the same way. And we as people, even a prime example would be a few years ago, Jason, when the world went into lockdown, just slammed shut. The world literally just stopped on a dime. And the fear-stricken panic that went through our country was phenomenal to sit back and watch. It was awful. Awful. Yes. And horrible, but at the same time, awful. Like, to sit back in awe and look at that and go, wow, how fast did our society just left-hand turn?
Yes. No. Again, another one of those things where you don't want to get too far off on that rabbit trail. But the ability for minor things to change people's minds and to radically reorient yourself is an amazing thing to watch. And that's a power that is often used for ill. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Right. But it can also be eventually used for good. If, again, the problem is the people who are behind the change have to be good. If the people behind the change have ill intent. Right. If they're the kinds of people who would have a white panel van that says free candy on it, then you're going to get nothing but bad out of it.
Yeah.
Again, eschatology is the study of the end. To my broader points, the end of a world system. It's an end of a way of thinking. It's an end of a world that is hostile to human life, in a way. Mm-hmm. Right? Our world is a world of abundance. The reason there's so much suffering is us. It's us. We are mismanaging ourselves. We are causing that pain. And so eschatology is a study of saying, hey, what's going to happen before that changeover into a new paradigm under a new ruler, under a new system where people aren't exploited, where people can be brethren, where people aren't being forced to go out and kill somebody they've never met for reasons that doesn't benefit them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting just to study the human psychology of it, Jason, and the concept. Two things sprung to mind while you were speaking, and I know you basically grew up here in Texas. I am from Houston.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's all right. I went to college in Irving. I wouldn't say Irving was much better.
Again, I'm a Dallasite, but I don't claim Irving.
But not many do. But two things that sprung to mind when thinking about the end and being comfortable with the end. Number one, the Branch Davidians. And this is the example that I give to anybody, when you are talking true believer, Jason. I wouldn't even say cult, anything like that. This was a gathering of people of like mind and spiritual belief.
Yes.
Who were targeted because of actions that they had on the outside that helped pay the rent. And that led down a horrible, horrible rabbit trail of events that led to other things and repercussion after. But those were people who, even as the hammer was falling, were fully convinced of their eschatology.
Yes.
And fully convinced of their vision of the end. My wife and I just watched the other one that sprung to mind, also because of Texas. It was the Heaven's Gate cult.
Oh, yeah.
They actively met in the DFW area, T and Doe. And that was another one. Like, come the end, my wife was like, oh, my God. And I was like, you have to understand, though, that and even the people who were left and remaining, who had a sense of guilt that they didn't complete their transformation.
Yeah.
That they left and these people had completed it. And she's like, how can they even still think of it in terms of completing the transformation? And I was like, that is just the eschatology that they have come to terms with, that they have come to a point of comfort with. And when faced with it,
it's their worldview.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Again, worldview is before all of this, right?
Yeah.
In many ways, again, politics, culture, philosophy, all of these things are rationalizations out of that worldview. And we can see the same thing happening in cultures around the world. Like, how do people, you know, how is it okay to enslave people, right? Everyone focuses on America, but it's like it was a worldwide thing. Everyone had the same ideology that it was okay to own people. Well, why? Because that was their worldview. Their worldview said, yep, owning people is a good thing. Getting them to do your work, that's a good thing. And they all came with it. Soviet Russia, how does Stalin starve over 12 million Ukrainians in 1 year when there was nothing, when Ukraine was producing nothing but food? He had a worldview that allowed for it, right? And everyone's okay with it, you know, and there was a lot of people who agreed with that. They said, yeah, you know what? It's okay because they're Ukrainians or whatever. These were enemies of the state in their mind. And again, let's talk about eschatology. Right now, we've got people, we tend to think of it as a religious term, but religion is just, again, the worldview.
Yeah.
We have social religions, whether we like it or not.
Oh, there's the religion of science, my man.
Oh, exactly. Oh, let's go there. I was going to go a slightly different direction, but let's go with that one. We have people who, if you were to get them at a bar and a few beers in and then be honest with you, they would say, everything that we have today as a scientific theory is either over the next century going to be completely upended as just nothing but wrong, or the nuanced understanding that we would have of it will be so complete that, again, it becomes functionally wrong, or it becomes wrong even if it's sort of functionally right. That's everything. And yet these are people who will stand up on television and tell you they understand how everything works and that you need to do what they are telling you right now. When they don't even understand, when they'll be honest, like, yeah, we don't know any of this.
Yeah, we don't actively know. I have, for better than the last decade of my life, run large scale corporate AV, a lot of it for pharmaceutical, and have sat in the back of, you know, trainings, things like that, just seminars about new medications. And to hear them, even about the medication that I use for my anxiety, man, they don't know why. They know it works for some people. Mm-hmm. They don't know why. They know what it does. Yes. But there's no explanation why the same dosage would work for me and not for you, bud. There's zero. Yeah. Zero. Well,
and, in the last, again, over the last year has been really bad for the pharmaceutical companies, because essentially a lot of this stuff, they're like, yeah, okay, so the whole SSRI thing, okay, maybe we didn't know what we were talking about at all. You're like, whoa, what you've been giving this stuff to kids. You've been shoving these medications into people's mouths for 30 years, and you don't actually know how it works.
No. Right? I was a prime example as a kid. I was a distraction to myself and others, as my wonderful high energy son is. And probably up around kindergarten, first grade, they put me on Ritalin. That was the solution back in like 79, 80, you know? Yeah. And then a few weeks later, they asked my mom to talk to the doctor and figure something out, 'cause we got to get him off of this. He's asleep. It took me completely the opposite direction, where it was like, all right, it's nap time now.
Exactly. Well, I love the fact that everyone's like, well, no, there's this hubris that comes with modernity, where it's like, oh, I can't believe those crazy doctors would give morphine and heroin to kids. And it's like, what do you think Ritalin is?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's literally the same. It's literally speed. It's heroin.
Speed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
no, speed. Sorry. I'm not a druggie.
No, that's all right. Adderall's the same way, you know.
Yeah.
Adderall. And it's the modern equivalent, and very much the same way, where some people it'll loop them. Like I remember I had a boss many years ago who had a kid who, it wasn't really an allergy to chocolate, but it was an aversion to chocolate,
right.
Mm-hmm. Where she had almost what you would see if you saw somebody who had a drink and a half and was 180 degrees a different person. If she had a chocolate donut, it was gone, dude. And in 30 minutes, she was huddled in the corner crying, like she was going through withdrawal. Yeah. And it's interesting because it's a different truth for everybody. Hey, man, it's just a chocolate iced donut. Like, it may make a kid crazy for 20 minutes, but they're going to be looped out and sugar crash in 45. This one, it was totally different.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting to see our society. I think what really got laid to bear over the pandemic and everything else regarding this, Jason, and regarding the topic of eschatology and people's view of the end and everything else, was really the world of cognitive dissonance that most people live in. And I mean, I came to my point of understanding of cognitive dissonance years ago after an experience with the paranormal, where I had a shadow person grab me. In my room. And I took that to my spiritual director, the man with the collar. And he was like, we don't have a teaching on that. And I'm like, I could have heard like a truck brake and slam into a wall, man.
Oh yeah.
Is what I heard in my soul and in my brain. Like, what do you mean you don't have an answer for that? What do you mean you don't have a question for that? What do you mean you don't have a teaching on that? Like, you're telling me that there are dark entities stalking my soul around every corner, and that you have a ritual called exorcism. But when I tell you this thing reached out from the shadows and grabbed me, you're like, well, I don't know.
Yeah. Dude, you have hit on a pain point for me, for the Western church. It's like, so let me get this straight. You believe that a supernatural being created the universe, has supernatural beings working under him, that there's other supernatural beings that want to get, that want to damn your immortal soul, which is a supernatural aspect of you as an individual. And you read a book that is entirely predicated on supernatural events occurring, but you don't actually believe in the supernatural.
Yeah.
Right. That's the world that we live in. I'm like, I've gotten trouble to saying this. Like, then I don't know that you're actually a Christian.
Well, and
because the, you're
the church. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Like, no. I'm sorry. We don't have room here. You know, you're telling me you don't believe the supernatural. And I'm like, but that's literally the entirety of your book.
Yeah.
That's the entirety of my book.
Yeah.
My book says these things are running around.
Even the big, even the big red words say those things are running around. My turn of phrase to him was, you asked me to believe in the spectral without evidence, but won't accept the the evidence of the spectral when presented. And that's strange to me. Well, and that is a leap of logic that I just can't make anymore.
Hey, you and me here, brother. That's why we're here. That's why we're having this conversation.
Me and my God are closer than ever. We talk regularly. Do I need to step into that building for that? Not necessarily. Not if that is the line that is towed, because I know too many people. I myself have had the experiences. So, you know, when you're talking about the cognitive dissonance, it's the fact of I can't believe this wholeheartedly when I know that this has happened.
And the worst part is it's there in the book. There is a worldview for this. There used to be a teaching on these things. That's the worst part, is there was a teaching a little over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But at some point over the last century and a quarter or so, everyone's like, no, we're going to let the atheists tell us what the universe really is. We don't want them to think that we're crazy. So we're just going to let them, these people decide what reality is. These people who believe that there is no supernatural, the people who believe that the world is nothing more than stuff that you can actually poke at with a stick, and that's it. And that's all there is to it. We'll still keep our beliefs, but we just don't think it actually interacts with us. And you're like, that is not what the book even teaches. And so people say, why don't people read the Bible anymore? I'm like, because you don't believe the Bible. Why are they supposed to read it when you clearly don't believe it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my problem.
And you know, it really does come down to a point of affecting change and affecting change in life, Jason, because it there is, once again, that eschatology, that whether you follow a Christian belief or not, what happens after, you know? And for me, I'm always reminded of the phrase from Fourth Degree Knights of Columbus, memento mori, tempus fugit, time flies, remember death.
Yeah.
Basically, how will you be remembered in the world? What have you done to make it easier for the people underneath you coming up? What have you done to help your family? What have you done to help your community? Things like that. And that is a lot of the reason why I have this show, is to have these conversations, to expose people to these thought forms and to the ideas of, you know, just because your concept of the afterlife does not conform with your pastor's, does not mean that your concept of the afterlife is not.
Well, and I would even go so far as to say, I would point out that I think a lot of what passes as pastors in the modern West, their views don't really conform with the scriptures they're supposed to be teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, straight up, that's the big issue here, is that all this was abandoned. We've essentially made ourselves deists at best, you know, that on a good day, right? And so the issue is, when you have, again, I just go back to the reason people aren't reading is they don't actually believe it, because they look at the world around them and they say, but this isn't matching up with what you're saying, right? And
yeah.
Again, let's go back to, again, to bring this all back to eschatology, right? Why do I focus on cryptozoology? Well, because I'm a creationist. Why do I focus on eschatology? Because if the beginning of the book and the end of the book, because again, I think this is the time frame we're living in. Again, I spent years working on the 2017 alignment, and it's convinced me that we're very, very close to the end here. I won't put a date on it because I can't. I would never try to, but I can certainly say we're in the season. Like, you know, again, that tab's going to come due pretty soon. But the simple fact of the matter is, I look at the beginning of the I focus on the beginning of the book and the end of the book, because for me, it's, if those are accurate, then the end, then it's the middle of the book that matters, because the middle of the book is about your life, what you live through, how you encounter and live through this world. Right. The simple fact of the matter is, in fact, Tex coined this term. I hate the fact that I didn't, but he calls it acute demonic possession. And his point was this, right? how many times do we know people who seemingly have everything and they're happy, everything, like they're high functional, everything's fine. And then they've ended up, committing suicide. And you're like, what just happened here? There's no note. There was no signs.
Sure.
It's just over. Well, but you can carry that in any number of ways. People who just suddenly disappear, right? They're just gone. We have no idea what's happened to some of them, and their bodies show up sadly somewhere else. People who everything's fine, and then they go and they commit some heinous act, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes you find, okay, were they 100% happy? No. But you also tend to find that maybe there was something else going on that opened them up to something. I have spoken to a number of police officers, and I've asked them this question because you hear it all the time in shows, right? Mm. And I think people don't even begin to understand how much their worldviews have been shaped by Hollywood, right? About everything, how the world works, how history looks, yeah. All of it. But I asked, have you ever heard this people say, after they've committed some terrible crime, I don't know what came over me, but I saw myself doing this terrible thing. Every one of them has said, yes, I hear this all the time from people who and these are seemingly normal people, but then they just snap and they do some very horrible, heinous thing. Well, he's taking saying maybe not all the time, but a lot of these times they may be this sudden acute possession. The thing goes in, the demon goes in, makes you do something horrible because you're open to it. And it was just the right time. You didn't take the precautions. You were engaged in something that seemed innocuous, but left you open for them to come in and play you like a puppet and then leave you with the consequences of it.
Yeah.
And this is where I think this is why I am where I am and why I do what I do, because at the end of the day, the modern church doesn't even believe that the demons are real, that powers and principalities are real, that they toy with people. And I think this has caused so much pain in people's lives, terror, fear, torment, and just and suffering that was completely avoidable.
Yeah.
Right. We're all going to suffer in life.
Yeah.
The world is what it is. But that doesn't mean that you should be running around doing stupid things that or ignorant things that make you that leave you open for more suffering.
Yeah.
Right. That's true of your life. And it should be true of the supernatural. But we don't do the things people used to do a couple centuries ago that would protect them from these things. I want, it's now becoming more common that if you hear, the story of if you hear someone's voice that you recognize and you're on a trail, if you're walking the Appalachian Trail, don't go out into the woods. Right. We hear that story now. But here's my thing. How often does that happen in a city?
Yeah.
How often is that happening where you're in a suburb or you're in a city? And you hear someone familiar and you go into that alley where no one is and then you don't come out. We don't know how often these things are really happening because what are the police going to do? How are they going to determine what is or is not something supernatural? And even if they're like, yep, this is a supernatural thing, you think they're going to write down on a piece of paper attacked by demon or forced by demon to do something terrible? They're not going to do that. They're going to say, again, going back to your point about how we've made science our new religion, they're going to say psychiatric break or psychotic break or whatever. They're going to find some way to hand wave an event that is clearly not of this material realm out of the way. But how many people have fallen prey to something that if we'd had the normal safeguards we had just 150 years ago, these people would still be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that even begs to question the whole concept of there may be many, many more missing because, hey, the only ones missing or reported missing are the ones that have people that care about them. And which ones would be the easier targets?
Exactly.
So
100% right there with you.
That is a interesting twist to go down with that, Jason, just the idea of. Specifically being targeted because of these things, one of the big points that I've brought up over the pandemic and since is, it vibrationally weakened us. I think individually, I know myself, I used to be able to keep 10, 12 balls in the air. Now it's 3 or 4, and good Lord, don't mention a chainsaw. you know, like it used to be like, yeah, throw something else in there. Why not? No, man, no. We all have a different bandwidth now. We all have a different way that we process information.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
And that has led to, once again, a point of cognitive dissonance that is just miraculously huge and massive.
Well,
Jason.
And to bring this and to connect this again back with eschatology is that eschatology says time frame, these demonic entities are going to become more prevalent. They're going to start interacting with people. This is a general understanding. Again, forget not just the Christian worldview, but basically everybody's worldview, that at the end, these things are going to start getting weird. Things are going to start getting wild. That's what we're seeing in the world today, which means we should be ever more present and more careful about how we live our lives and focusing on not falling victim to these things. And instead, we're doing the exact opposite, and we're inviting them into our freaking homes.
Yeah,
we're putting them on T-shirts. We're talking about them by name, and we aren't even bothering to put up the things that that we used to put up again 150 years ago to keep them out of our homes. And we don't do the simple things we should be doing. So it's like, as in a time when we should be more careful, more cautious, when we're told to do these, to be more careful and more cautious, we're being less cautious. And maybe that's, again, why would these things become more prevalent? Because of our stupidity, of our arrogance, of our, oh, well, hey, it's cool, let's just play with it. Again, you don't give a loaded gun to a kid because you know it's not going to end well. And we're all a bunch of six-year-olds with AK-47s right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're wondering why people are getting hurt.
Yeah, it's you brought up an interesting point a few minutes ago with the acute possession. Father Malachi Martin, in his book Hostage to the Devil many years ago, brought up a stage just before demoniac possession, or before demonic possession, called demoniac obsession. And it was basically where somebody had given their will over to something, and that would caused them, because of that energy, to do things that are uncharacteristic. For instance, somebody may give their will over to drugs and addiction and suddenly start stealing to support that. All kinds of things. And he mentioned that that is what he saw more than anything as he walked the streets was people who were walking around with a demoniac obsession behind their eyes in our society today, be that pornography, what have you, whatever dopamine fix you have given yourself over to, rules your day. And when you think about it, there is kind of that idle hands are the devil's playground concept. If you look back at things 20, 30 years ago, man, before we had the access and the easy access that we have to information that we do now, you didn't see the necessary obsession over device or news intake or what's happening in your backyard? Have you?
Right. The local news actually mattered to you more. And part of this thing. So this is where, again, something I've been exploring for a little while now is, where is the line between the psychological and the spiritual? And I'm not convinced that line is as hard and fast as everyone tends to think it is.
It is not.
And I think that's one of the big mistakes we make is we sort of assume things are psychological when they're actually spiritual, and we often forget that our mindset can be the thing that leaves us open to the supernatural.
Yeah.
And may in just there's a lot more going on. Again, the idea that maybe our understanding of the world isn't what we think it really is.
It may be what is actively manifesting the supernatural. Jason, I mean, go read any paranormal study, what have you, about poltergeists.
Oh, yeah.
Typically caused by a teenager going through some turmoil.
Yes.
Where literally they are just affecting the world around them. And even like you may say this is some crazy hoodoo. Even the world of remote viewing. It blew my mind when I went to the remote viewing conference last year, had a great opportunity to sit and have breakfast with Hal Putoff and talk with him. Read on to so many topics, but it was his paper on experiments in the lab and how scientists were affecting their experiment in the lab by thinking about it when they got home.
Yes. No. So, yeah, again, don't want to get too far afield, but yeah, I mean, remote viewing, psychic phenomena, it's all real. Right. Yeah. Now, again, the question, but here's where the real question comes in. What do we even mean by real? Because allow me to cheese off half your audience real quick. When we look at UFOs, right, and alien encounters, let's get rid of the stuff that is the government, right? Just off the top, just say, look, a lot of this stuff, disinformation, we've known for a long time how the government is actively manipulating all of this. Let's get that out of the way, and let's look at the truly exotic material, the stuff that doesn't fit in that realm. John Keel, Jacques Vallée, everyone said, hey, this thing, you know, even go back to Strieber, right? Yeah. You know, in Communion, it's clear. His wife said that whatever this phenomena is, it is associated with what we call death. Joshua Cutchins, in Ecology of the Soul, has pointed this out as well. There is clearly a connection between the let's call them UFOs for a moment here. The quote unquote aliens. There is a connection between how we perceive the universe and what they appear to be. You go back 100 years, 200 years, they would have called them fae or elves or goblins. In fact, the early days of ufology, we have creatures, aliens, quote unquote, showing up that look like elves and goblins. The idea of the gray sort of becomes normalized in really in the 70s. Even Betty and Barney Hill's first descriptions of what their alien abductors look like weren't the grays.
It wasn't the grays.
Depict them as now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
No, I was saying it wasn't the grays.
Right. Exactly. Now, they became the grays later on. That's the interesting thing. It did. And now people see the grays. Well, let's look at something that we've seen happen in real time. Slenderman.
Yeah.
Slenderman is not a pre-existing thing. We know it was. We know who created it, when it was created. And yet people are now starting to see it.
Yeah.
Is it possible that a lot of this stuff is it's not that it isn't real, meaning that there isn't something behind it, but that the form, the shape, and how it interacts with us is basically being created by our brains.
Yeah.
It's stimulating it, but our brains are the ones that are developing the story. So the way it looks to us, how it interacts with us, is dependent on our own on our minds. So this may be, again, it goes back to the idea that maybe our world isn't exactly what we think it is, that our minds may be actively participating in creating these things, which goes back to why you're not supposed to say their names, why you're not supposed to watch certain things. Or because, like, let's throw this question out here. What if simply watching an occult behavior, even if you're like on the television, what if that makes you a participant and therefore active and open to whatever it is that they were trying to conjure?
Yeah. I just popped up on screen a second ago the definition of egregore, which is basically an occult concept representing a non-physical entity that arises from the collective thoughts of a distinct group of people. One of my favorite stories regarding this is when Nightmare on Elm Street first came out.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Wes Craven came out in an interview because shortly afterward, the Night Stalker killings, started happening in California. And he actively thought that people's fear of Freddy Krueger had created an entity that had possessed the Night Stalker.
Yes.
And caused him to go out and commit his killings.
Yes. Well, that's why he writes The Final Nightmare.
Yeah.
That is literally why he did it. Like, people don't get what he was doing with that movie.
Oh, it's a great one. It's beautiful.
It's my favorite one.
Same.
It's my favorite one because what he does is he tells this story within a story within a story. And the purpose is to kill Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
But the real ultimate purpose is to kill the thing that he believes he may have created. In the movie, it says, look, there's always been a demon trapped within stories, right? That's the story that he's telling. And he's like, that's why we're writing this movie. Of course, the end of the movie is him closing this book, which is the manuscript for everything that you've seen. But what he was really doing was saying he's trying to kill this thing that he thinks he created.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I'm of the opinion that this world is a lot stranger than we want to think. And we used to be smart enough not to actively make ourselves targets of these beings. And now we're offering ourselves up as a veritable smorgasbord. And we wonder why people are going nuts. In fact, I literally had a conversation. Oh, I just forgot his name. I'm terrible at the names. On Friday, I was filling in for a friend on their show. Anyway, long story short, we were talking about the Wendigo spirit, right? Mm. Most people get Wendigos and Skinwalkers confused. So that was the bulk of the conversation, was trying to say, no, this is what's different. And essentially, the Wendigo is just a possessing spirit. You did something and it possesses you. And I'm like, this is a one-to-one parallel to what werewolves were in Eastern Europe 100 and 200 years ago, right? Our modern concept of werewolves is not what they had. They had a very different idea. And they're essentially the same thing. And one of the co-hosts, Brandy, said, well, it feels like, with all the, this Wendigo spirit would be having a field day today, considering all the, taboos, the cultural taboos that are being violated, right? And I stopped for a second. I'm like, are we sure it isn't having a field day?
Yeah.
Because stop to look at all of the people who are doing, I mean, we make shows about them now, about how these terribly sick people are going out and committing heinous crimes, in which, by the way, does involve cannibalism a disproportionate percentage of the time.
Yeah.
What if the real issue here is that the reason we're seeing this rise of these sociopaths and these brutal, brutal killers is because we've opened up our entire society to these spirits and they are having a freaking field day?
Yeah.
Just going through and turning people into these monsters. And maybe these were people who, again, probably already had some issues, but they pushed them over the edge into doing something truly heinous.
Yeah.
Right. One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes is The Howling Man. Spoiler alert for a 60-year-old episode. Long story short, this man is going through the, recounting this event of he's in the Carpathian mountains right after World War One. He ends up letting Satan go. Right. And the end of the episode is him saying, and it was after that World War II started. And he says, the moral being, humans don't need help being evil.
Yeah.
But we do need help doing truly horrible, evil things. That's what he does. He takes the little evil and he makes them much, much larger. What if that is what's happening in the world today? We are breaking the taboos of every culture for the last 4,000 years. And we've opened ourselves up and we're surprised to find that the pit of vipers that everyone in the world has said there's a pit of vipers in there, don't open. We open it up and throw ourselves down. We're getting bit by all these vipers and we're like shocked.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
What's that understand. About?
Yeah. Why are we getting bit by all these vipers that everyone said have existed for the entirety of human history?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is what we see in eschatology. It's like, hey, you're going to open the pit of vipers and they're going to bite you and you're all going to act surprised. And the worst part, the worst part of the entire book of Revelation for me is essentially it says God would stop what he was doing. It's like, if you stopped playing with the Vipers,
yeah,
this would all end. It would all stop. And but we won't. We won't stop doing it.
I want to kind of wrap things up with the idea of prophecy, Jason.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people get caught up in this concept of prophet, whether it's your Corey Goods, whether it's the people who follow the Pied Piper of folks like Alex Jones, whether it's people who follow the Pied Piper of straight up everyday media.
Yes.
We have once again this confirmation bias and this idea of looking for somebody to save us, looking for somebody to give us the answer and the way to follow. And people forget the fact that, like you were saying, with Revelation, there's a way out. Never forget that an actual prophet, folks, and this is why I say Nostradamus, not really a prophet, maybe a cool seer, maybe had some connections in other ways with the universe, but prophet, not really, because prophets give you a way out.
Yeah.
Prophets will always say, if you keep doing this, this is going to happen. The 100%. Option is you can stop doing it. You may not like what I'm saying. You may shoot the messenger. You may kick me out of the city. What have you. But there's an option to be had. And 100%. That's what we have to remember, is that anything that paints you into a corner, religiously, spiritually, what have you, that's not prophecy. That's...
Yeah.
That's something else. And it's something very dangerous that is there to control paradigm.
Yes. No, it's one of those things where you don't want to even say anyone who's telling you to conform to whatever the powers of the world are telling you to conform to, like, don't listen to them either. But the problem is there's going to be false Christs. Like, there's going to be false prophets. That's even literally one of the titles of the figures in Revelation is the false prophet.
Yes.
And to your point, a false prophet's going to tell you there's no way out. There's going to tell you that there's nothing you can do. Now,
yeah, it's again, the spiritual ultimatum.
Right. I will say this, though. Yeah. I mean, there's things that maybe, you know, I'm not going to be able to change the entire world. Right. I can't change necessarily how people on the other side of the world are, you know, whether or not they're going to push a button that nukes somebody else. Right. I can't. But what I can do is, can I change my life in my situation? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Do I have to conform to what the world is telling you to conform to? No. And the problem is there are people who are telling you, you know, let's fight the power, but they're just another aspect of that power. That's the worst part of it is this is where discernment really comes in, is it's bait and switch.
The flip side of the coin is still the same coin.
Exactly.
Jason.
You have to leave the coin. You have to realize, hold on, I'm getting played on both sides here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that's when you have it's that total breaking free. And we conform ourselves to those. We find an ideology one way or the other to conform to. And it's like, well, hold on. Really stop. What does true freedom look like? What does the Bible actually teach? Like, let's be honest. What does it actually teach? Is it what these mega churches are teaching? No, because the mega churches are just telling you to sit down and behave. Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. At the end of the day, most of what if it's got money and power behind it, it ain't. Then it's part of the system. That's where it is.
Yeah.
Even our politics. It's we have this right left dichotomy, and it's like, you do realize you're getting played by both sides, and deliberately so. We're no matter who's in office, we're still going down the same rabbit holes. We're going down the same trail.
Yeah.
Everything the people who have the money and the power, they keep getting more money and more power, and we keep getting less freedom, less options. No matter who's in control, it's because they're all working for the same people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I say it regularly on the show. I have for years and years that the second you hear somebody not agree with the concept of a third party, ask them if they'd like to live in a two-walled house.
Yeah.
That's called a lean-to. That's not a house. Like, yep. I'd like more than two walls. That'd be great. That's just it. The world is full of option. Eschatology changes as your worldview changes, as you grow and change in your worldview and your religious depth and your spiritual path, as should your eschatology, you know.
And again, does eschatology make you sad? Does it make you scared, or does it make you optimistic for a better future?
Yeah.
Does it give you, is it giving you the drive to say, hey, hold on, if it is coming to an end, then I need to make what the time I have here matter. It needs to mean something.
Yeah.
And if it's not giving you that, then you've got the wrong view of this whole thing. Yeah. There are things, I'll even say, yeah, there's things to look out for. Again, wrote a whole book on it. But that being said, the point is to say, great, then live your life to its fullest. Go make a difference, but understand what does making a difference really mean? Are you rearranging chairs on the Titanic? Or are you getting people into the boats?
Yeah.
Because if you're just rearranging chairs on the deck, then that's of no value either.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a very apt analogy in a lot of ways, Jason. I want to thank you so much for your time, for your honesty tonight, even about belief and your own personal belief and what we can do to help deepen ourselves and help broaden our understanding of our fellow man.
No, hey, Chris, love you, love the show. Happy to come on anytime. I appreciate you thinking of me.
Oh, absolutely, man. We need to make it much more regular. Let everybody know where they can go, because, I mean, of course, we've got your content up on the Curious Realm videos page. You can go to curiousrealm.com/videos and subscribe to the YouTube. Let everybody know where they can go to follow your content, where they can go to find you and keep up with all the latest.
Yeah. So right now, everything is happening on Jason McLean Questions Everything. You can definitely hop over to Sewer Papers as well. We're going to start putting out some more stuff over the next couple of months. I want that to be more directed. Unfortunately, it looks like sewerpapers.com is down for the moment, so I'm trying to figure that one out. But if it's still down, run over to Sewer Papers over on YouTube. It's got links to my books as well. Yeah, it looks like it's still down. But it's got links to my books, and I'll put links up for my work on eschatology on Questions Everything as well.
Absolutely. Jason, I want to thank you. There it is.
Yep.
There it is.
Yeah, no, we're getting ready to do more concentrated and directed videos on that one.
Great.
So trying to sort of be very direct and what's going on and answer very specific questions that a lot of people have.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, I want to thank you so much again for your time. Your time as always. I want to thank you for your message as well. I think it's very important. So
thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing also.
Thanks, bud. Hold the line real quick while we close things out. And we'll be right back with you, bud. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Jason McLean over at Siru Papers, as well as Jason McLean Questions Everything on YouTube, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can tune in live every week. That's where you can share your story. If you have had an experience with the paranormal, if you're a targeted individual, if you've witnessed or had an experience or encounter with cryptids or with UFOs, UAPs, stop on by, fill out our experiencer form, share your experience, your pictures with us, and we will share your experience with our professionals and maybe get you some answers. Thank you so much for everybody for tuning in. As always, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services. as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.